Hello, I'm Father Ray Petrucci. Welcome to Thoughts for the Week. We are going to have a marvelous program today. Before I introduce our guest, I'd like to introduce all of you, as I do every program, to a wish of mine, and that is that we might hear from you. You know, you may have some areas interest that you'd like us to explore, some themes you'd like us to find some guests and talk about. Delighted to do that. We hope we provide good programming for you, but if you have something you would like to hear, we're happy to do that. If you'd like to reach out to us, we would like to give you two ways to do that. First is the traditional mail, putting a stamp on a letter. If you'd like to do that, please do so and send it to the following address. Thoughts for the Week, Post Office Box 7466. That's Post Office Box 7466. Greenwich, Connecticut. And the zip code in Greenwich is 06836. That's 06836. If you're on the computer and rather email us, that's easily done too. And you send it to clemens10@aol.com. Again, your comments to clemens10@aol.com. While you're on the computer, I'd like to invite you to go to our internet magazine, Spirituality for Today. And you can find that at spirituality.org. At spirituality.org. If you go to .com, you're off somewhere else. But I hope you do go to that magazine, because not only do we have, some interesting articles and features, but also Thoughts for the Week is available on the computer. So you can listen to older programs perhaps a favorite you'd like to listen to again. So we encourage you to do that. Now, Dorothy Rivera, my co-host, could not be with us for this program, but thank goodness my guest can be here. And we'd like to welcome Mr. Damien O'Connor. And Damien, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Now, today we're going to talk about a saint. And as we might suspect from the introduction of Damien O'Connor, we're going to speak about Father Damien of Malachi. And you may know him. He's, again, one of those saints that a lot of people at least know a little bit about. And I hope we can learn a lot more today. Now, in speaking of Father Damien, we know him as Damien of Malachi, but actually he was Damien of Belgium, wasn't he? Could you tell us a little bit about his early life?
Sure. I could tell you quite a bit. It's one of my favorite topics. He was born Joseph de Wooster. And he chose the name Damien after Cosmos and Damien. He grew up as Joseph, and one of his nicknames was Jeff by his friends and family.
And what year was that, by the way?
What year was he born? 1840.
1840, so we have sort of a historical context there. Now, what happened in his when he decided to consider the religious life? How did he become an order priest, or did he become a diocesan?
He was a missionary priest. Uh-huh. He was one of eight kids, and back then no TV, no radio, and they were farmers. And his mother was a very devout Catholic, and she would read to them from Lives of the Saints, and they would literally go out into the woods or in the yard and imitate them and practice them and go into the woods sometimes and act like hermits, and they would try to pray all day, and just because it was hard to do, and it was but three of his siblings joined religious orders, his two sisters and his older brother Pamphile, who was a brilliant, brilliant man, joined the Sacred Hearts Fathers of Jesus and Mary, which was the order St. Damien ended up joining. They were originally called the Picpus Fathers, which was simply the street in which provincial's house was on. It was Picpus Street or Avenue or whatever it was.
Wow. So it's kind of interesting that you talked about the going off, let's say, into the woods to practice being a hermit.
Sure.
You could say, they're playing a game, but in a sense they were kind of exploring different kinds of spirituality.
That's right. That's exactly right. And they loved how tough it was. And even though he's a saint, he was no saint growing up. Mm-hmm. He did all the rambunctious things, boys do, and got in trouble all the time. And, it's one of the reasons I like him. He's very relatable,
That's terrific. Now, how, of course, Damien here is growing up in Belgium. Mm-hmm. He ends up in Hawaii. How mm-hmm. did that occur?
It's a great story. His older brother, as I said, Pamphile, brilliant theologian, brilliant man, was scheduled to go to Hawaii because they needed, I believe it was 6 missionaries to go there, and they asked the Sacred Hearts Fathers to go. St. Damien wasn't then Brother Damien because he wasn't even ordained yet, and they weren't even sure if they were going to ordain him because they didn't think he was smart enough. Mm-hmm. But his brother was mm-hmm. brilliant. So his brother's assigned to go, and then he comes down with typhus, mm-hmm. and he was obviously could no longer go. Mm-hmm. Well, Brother Damien went to the Superior General of the Order for the world and requested that he get to go in his brother's place. Well, by doing that, you can imagine politically what that was like. He went over 2 or 3 people above him, mm-hmm. his own superiors, to go right to the top. Mm-hmm. Well, the Superior General was so inspired, he said yes. Mm-hmm. So he got to go in his brother's place, and he took a very long boat ride from Belgium all the way to Hawaii. And he upset quite a few people in his order, because who was he to do that? But that was his style, you know, and he really felt called to be a missionary. He wasn't ordained until he was actually in Hawaii.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah.
Ah, very good. So being a part of missionary order certainly explains why he would have a worldwide compass.
Sure.
So off he goes to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
He is there. And now he, as you're saying, he wasn't ordained until he was in Hawaii.
That's correct, yeah.
So now he becomes spiritually even more embedded into the Hawaiian culture and the people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we do always think about Damien as a person of the lepers, but there's mm-hmm. a long story before he gets to that point, I presume. Now, how did Hawaii deal with lepers?
Well, it's
terrible disease.
Not something I'm sure they're proud of to look back mm-hmm. now. And obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, but back then it was the Kingdom of Hawaii. It wasn't part mm-hmm. one of our states. Mm-hmm. And leprosy also was not indigenous to them. It's not something that started in Hawaii. It was mm-hmm. it came there from a variety of different ways, and we won't get into that. But it was, mm-hmm. and the Hawaiians knew that, so they were obviously very upset. But it was spreading like crazy, and they didn't know exactly how it was spreading,
mm-hmm.
and they really panicked. This is in my opinion, but they did. And they said, we have to find a place to quarantine these people. And so they found on the island of Molokai, there is a peninsula that protrudes out, obviously, that has 2,000-foot sea cliffs, the tallest in the world, the steepest in the world, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other side is this ocean. I've been there 3 times. I've seen it. The ocean's crushing in on the rocks. There's no way to escape. And so they created this area, this settlement, and sent all the leprosy patients there. And there's 2 sides. There's Kaluau and Kalupapa. And they dropped them off there and quarantined them there. And it was, in all my reading and research throughout my whole life, I've never heard of something that was so hellish, that was, it was pure hell on earth. They didn't give them resources. They didn't give them materials. They didn't give them anything. They just left them there. This includes children, too. They're forcibly removed from their families. And sent there. Oftentimes the boats would push them right off the edge of the boat.
Mm.
These are people with leprosy. So you have open sores. Can you imagine being in the salt water trying to get to the shore? Pretty horrific situation that was going on there.
It speaks to how terrified the people were, as I'm sure occurred during the times of plague
mm-hmm.
And throughout human history, or some disease that they just didn't know how it was spread. But it still was rather terrible.
And they dehumanized them.
Yeah, yeah.
They made them a disease that we need to be afraid of. And when you dehumanize someone, then it's easy to hate them.
Yeah.
And that's
they become
an
enemy.
Yeah. And that's what they did.
A threat.
Yeah.
So how large an island is it?
It's 33 square miles. The peninsula?
Mm-hmm.
It's 33 square miles.
33 square miles. Wow. Well, now perhaps we could see what's how the church got involved with this, how Damien would end up there. What happened? What's the story with that?
They realized, as you can imagine, that these people, we're talking hundreds and hundreds of people. There was just over 700 people when Father Damien went there.
My God.
That were living, as I said, in pure hell. and they needed some missionaries to go there. So the Sacred Hearts Fathers were asked if they would please send some of their guys there. Now, Father Damien had already been in Hawaii for quite a few years and knew a little bit about the disease, certainly knew the Hawaiian people, certainly loved the Hawaiian people. And there was a group of them, and four of them volunteered to go. And Father Damien was the first one to volunteer. And they were supposed to only go for 3 months each on a rotating schedule. Well, that never ended up happening. He ended up being there for 3 months and said, you can't possibly ask me to leave. I'm just starting here. I have so much work to do. And he ended up being there for 16 years.
Did he grasp the idea that he probably is exposing himself to this disease and may end up catching it?
I think he knew, he absolutely knew he could get it. Mm. It wasn't his desire to get it. I think he was petrified going there. But he went, which tells you so much about his faith and his character that he still went. And by the way, two important facts. He went there with his breviary and nothing else. He literally left. They needed him immediately and went. And there's a letter. It's out there. You can read. I think he was there 2 months, and he said to his superior, "Can you please send me my clothes?" Can you imagine?
Yeah,
he didn't even have anything.
Wow.
He had his cassock. He had a hat on. That was it. And his breviary. And he would live under a pandanus tree next to St. Philomena's Church. This is all documented stuff. And he just began ministering to the people. And the second fact that's kind of, I think it's kind of neat, his feast day is May 10th. And that's the day, not the day that he died, it's the day that he said yes and volunteered to go to Molokai.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so I like that the church picked that day for his feast day.
It's almost like here's my path to sainthood, as it were, without even realizing that. So it's funny, the people must have said, gee, you came here basically the way we did, you know, with nothing.
Well, it's funny you should say that. That's it. They did think that.
Huh.
Here, he just literally, he came on some boat and they dropped him off and he had nothing, absolutely nothing. But he immediately went to work serving them.
Tell me how he approached the idea of serving the people on Molokai, serving the lepers. I guess I'm saying, you gave me a hint of what it was like in that very strong term. I mean, it's hellish.
It was hellish.
You know, you describe it and that was what it was. How did he go about making or bringing not only the gospel, but I guess you might say a civilized kind of community there?
Two things. Second one is most important. But the first one I'll say is there's many stories about there were a few Protestant ministers that were there and they would come and go. Very few people ended up staying there to minister to those that had leprosy.
Mm-hmm.
But a few of the Protestant ministers complained that he had too much joy, that he was too happy, and that, you know, I was taking away from their flock and this and that. And that's nothing against our Protestant brothers and sisters, but I just found that, isn't that funny?
Mm.
He just came with the zeal about him. But the second thing that he should be known most for, if he's not already, is he provided people that lived in pure hell, that had no sense of integrity, self-worth, nothing. Imagine, they were dropped off there to die. That's why they were dropped. He provided them with dignity. Well, how do you do that? And one of the ways he did it, and there was many ways he did it, was when they would die, they would get like a shallow grave, or they would just be put over here just to rot. He was known to build one casket a day. Imagine that. And they would say, why would you go through all that work to bury these people and give them a gravestone? And through his actions and through his words, he taught them that even in death, you have dignity. He would share his utensils. His superiors were so angry at him all the time. He was always getting in trouble with them because he would do things like, if someone would say, may I borrow your fork? Of course you may. I mean, these people had leprosy.
Mm.
He smoked a pipe. And he started smoking a pipe because it would help with the smell of the open sores to alleviate a little bit. And someone, may I borrow your pipe? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
He would never hold back. Now, you think he's crazy to do that. You're going to get leprosy. That was secondary to him. Primary was making sure these people felt loved, that he brought them to the faith. He had over almost 1,000 converts. 1,000. It's amazing. Well, of course he did. They loved it. It was like the early church, you know, the first couple hundred years of our church. People didn't join the Catholic faith because of some heavy theology. They joined because of the witness of these people living it. And they saw Father Damien living it, and they wanted to be part of that. They wanted to know that joy. So no matter what stage they were in their death, he was helping them to live it with dignity. It's a really, really important fact about him.
That's interesting as you're speaking. That brings it to today, too. I mean, living one's faith and witnessing one's faith is still that which I think would reach out to those suffering from many emotional diseases and loss of faith today. Now, so he establishes a church, and maybe you could, I know you alluded to it earlier on, St. Philomena's?
St. Philomena's church was actually there before he got there.
Ah, okay.
And it was built by, which I think is really kind of neat, it was built by those that had leprosy that were that were there. They wanted a church. Maybe a third of them were Catholic before he got there, but they still built this kind of primitive church. Mm. Now, as I said, he grew up on a farm, and he was a very, very handy guy. Mm-hmm. And from farming to construction. So while he was there, he rebuilt the church or expanded it twice because they needed more more space.
Why St. Philomena?
I don't know, and I've researched that quite a bit. She was self-proclaimed virgin at 13 years old. She went to, with her and her father went to Italy, I believe, and it was Emperor Diocletian that fell in love with her and tried to be with her, and when she refused,
Diocletian,
they tried stabbing her, the arrows, shot arrows into her, all these threw her in the water with an anchor around her, and as the story goes, she survived all that, and angels came and prayed, as the story goes, they prayed for her, and saved her from that. It's incredible miracles. And then he finally beheaded her and this and that, which is absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
But I do find it interesting. I'd like to imagine, while I don't know this is a fact, I'd like to imagine they chose that name because of so many children that were on Kalaupapa and Kalawao that were just left there abandoned. Mm. Beautiful, innocent little kids, much like St. Philomena. So that's at least what I like to think. But there isn't really a lot of hardcore evidence on why they chose that name for that particular church.
And how many years, again, did Father Damien serve?
16.
16,
yeah.
Remember that. Were there other priest religious or other help finally come to help him? Or?
Yes, but they didn't stay. So there was some that would come to help, and for whatever reason, most of the time was because they couldn't handle how incredibly difficult it was. I mean, it's beyond what we can imagine, actually.
Mother Teresa would be hard-pressed.
Possibly, yeah. Well, and the second reason was, to be perfectly honest, he was a really hard guy to work with. He was, and I know this because my mom is from Belgium. I get it. He's a built, stubborn Belgian man, and his way or the highway. You know, and so he was tough to be around at times, too. But there was one man that did come. His name is Joseph Dutton, and he was known as Brother Joseph. And he came, a former military guy, and he came because he had felt he lived a pretty horrible life, and he wanted to give the rest of his life in service. But he was a real tough guy, and Father Damien liked him immediately. Mm. And they became very, very close, and he stayed well after he passed away, too. So he was the only one that really stayed with him.
When you're looking at Father Malachi, and you've mentioned how sometimes it can be difficult, and I think there were troubles with the dealing with either the government and the church administration
back
on the island.
Yeah,
with him. what were some of the big challenges there?
He was quite a handful for them. Now his superior was also the bishop. So you got kind of a double whammy there. So you got, the provincial was also the bishop. And he was constantly, he always had the best of intentions, to be fair to him. He wanted supplies for homes to build huts for the people. He wanted plants so they can garden. He wanted it. And he kept asking. He shamelessly would keep asking. And they got really, really annoyed with that. And I'm simplifying it for the show right now.
Right, of course.
And so what he started to do was send letters out to other people around the world. Mm. He'd send them home, he'd send them to wherever, asking for help. Well, in the process, he would write, in those letters, he'd write about the situation he was dealing with. Well, his legend grew around the world. Who's this guy, this priest working with these leprosy patients? And so people started sending, you know, whether it was money or materials or this or that. And you can imagine how his own order and how the Hawaiian government felt that they were embarrassed by this.
Yeah.
Because he,
yeah.
And that wasn't his intention.
Right.
His intention was, my people need this.
Yeah.
And so he just kept doing that. And so...
Boy, oh boy. Well, you know, when you think about his life among the lepers, a time came when he would discover that he not only was working for them, but he was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us about that?
Yeah. One of his homilies, he started with, "We lepers."
Mm.
And it was just after he was diagnosed. And they knew exactly what he meant. And if he wasn't already close to them, which he really was, mm-hmm. now he was one of them. You know, because he truly understood what they were going through. And another quick story, if I may, if we're going to talk about Father Damien or Saint Damien, we have to also acknowledge what the sacraments meant to him. And he said, "If not for the Eucharist, I could not do what I do," because he had dark thoughts, depression, just like I could imagine anybody would being there.
Yeah.
But he would go to the Blessed Sacrament in the church, and he said that would give him strength. And the other thing that he really struggled with was confession, because he rarely could receive confession, could rarely go.
Yeah.
And there's a famous story where he begged and begged, and no one would go because they were afraid, none of the priests would go, they were afraid to get leprosy.
Yeah.
Understandable.
Mm-hmm.
So his superior, his provincial also, he said, "Well, I'm going then. If none of my priests will go, I'll go."
Mm.
And he takes a boat, and the captain of the boat wouldn't let him off the ship because he said, "If you get off the ship, you're never getting back on."
Mm.
So Father Damien rows out to the boat, and long story short, he finds out that he's not allowed to be with his superior, the bishop, and he yells to the bishop, "May I make my confession right here?"
Mm.
And the bishop said, "Okay."
Mm-hmm.
And he yelled his confession. Can you imagine this? From the rowboat up to the ship in French to each other for everybody to hear.
Yeah.
That's how badly he wanted to go to confession. And he did.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. And here we're struggling to get people to come to confession, you know, once in a while. He was begging for it all the time. He literally yelled it from the rowboat. Incredible.
I don't have to worry too much about the seal at that point. But it sounds typically... Like the man he was.
Yep. Rough and tough and
Boy, oh boy. What is it? What were some of the circumstances surrounding his final death? Boy, I'll tell you. I'm referring to the pictures they have. Certainly in his time, they had photography had reached a point where they were able to take pictures, pretty good ones. And you saw the man Damien as a young man before he went to Hawaii. Then you see him in the full-blown leprosy and the terrible disfigurement that occurred. Yet a lot of holiness radiated from that man, too. Any stories regarding his final end of his life? And
sure, there's... I love to get asked to give talks on him, and I actually have some relics of his. And there's a famous picture of him where he's wearing a sling. And on that sling was given to him by St. Mary Ann Cope, who... succeeded him on the island in serving those that had leprosy. And you see that when he's laying in the bed. What's interesting about that bed was he didn't sleep on a bed. He slept on the floor while he was there as penance. But the only reason he slept on that bed at the end was so that those taking care of him could have easier access to him instead of being, you know, on the floor. And the other thing, soon after he wanted to die on Good Friday.
Hmm.
Of Holy Week, obviously, but he ended up dying on the Monday of that. He almost made it. Another thing, right after he died, you could see it in the pictures. The leprosy in his face disappeared.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you could see it as he's laid out in Saint Philomena's. That it's fascinating.
Well, that is fascinating because his face was too. Oh my gosh,
it was bad.
It was really bad.
Really bad.
Wow. What is it? Do you know much about Malachi today?
I do, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's now a national, it's part of our national historic parks, and mm-hmm. Which is great. So it's being preserved. And there are still 8 or 9 people that had leprosy that were, once it was, the cure came out, I believe in the 50s or 60s, mm-hmm. I'm forgetting exactly, they were cured. They still have the deformity on their bodies, but some of them. But the rest of them, all of them, are allowed to live out their days on Kalaupapa.
Yeah,
so and it's very hard to get there. I'm very blessed to know someone there that you have to get special permission to go down there. And he's done that for me. Well, I've been there 3 mm-hmm. times, and it's really incredible there. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
But they're very, very private, as you can imagine.
So it's an island with... really, 8 people on it? Is that
it's not an. It's the island of Molokai, and then there's a peninsula that sticks
about,
out.
Yeah.
So, no, there's actually probably 100 people total there now.
Okay.
Most of them people work for the Parks Department and keeping the place up. And
mm-hmm.
But I was there last time I was there. They have a ship that comes in once a year, with all the supplies for the year.
Wow.
And I'm talking food, lumber, everything.
Wow.
Once a year. So talk about planning ahead.
Okay.
You know, there's no grocery store. There's not, you know.
Nothing there.
Yeah.
Wow. About the holiness, you know, you've mentioned some of those things. How can you tell us about his particular holiness? What it, what forms or what types? So you mentioned the Eucharist, obviously, but what impressed him or what touched him spiritually from his ministry to the people within himself, his own prayer life? How would you describe his holiness?
Unlike some other saints that exuded holiness, mm-hmm. and we both mm-hmm. know people that I'm sure you're around them, and they they're holy. You can just feel it.
You almost feel like genuflecting.
Nobody says that about you and I, but, you know, they...
but, oh, Damien. Well, I mean, I'm overwhelmed.
So he didn't exude that. Uh-huh. His actions exuded it.
Mm-hmm.
These heroic actions mm-hmm. of selfless charity to people, cleaning the open sores, giving them the utensil that they might want, knowing that he could get leprosy. It was his actions, the building of the caskets for the people or the huts and the chapels that he built. And it was constantly, it was so inspiring for people to see that. That's where his holiness came through, which mm-hmm. I find very inspiring because mm-hmm. I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I may not mm-hmm. exude holiness, but I can try to be holy through my actions. And he's a great example of that for me.
That's wonderful. Well, we're in the last minute of our program. What I'd like to do is to ask you to perhaps give the audience a little information if they want to learn more about St. Damien of Molokai.
Sure.
What might be the best way of learning?
Well, if I may, a little plug. I'd be happy to, if anyone would ever want me to talk about him. I've studied my whole life. I have one really pretty rare relics of his I bring, people can venerate them. And the second thing, there's many books, but the one I would suggest is called Holy Man. It's a really, really good book on the history of St. Damien.
Really good. And how can they reach you about setting up a lecture?
Through my email. It's my name, Damien, Damien, 415-510.
Thank you so much. Damien O'Connor, or you could also probably Google Damien O'Connor out there. You might find
it. Well, it's at gmail.com.
Great. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you, my audience, for listening. Join us again next week.